Hello, I'm Douglas Frank. I'm joined by Mitra Mark Power, and we are going to wander around the topic of path of mindful activity. So thank you, Mark, for joining me this morning. We'll call it this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
You're very welcome.
Our previous conversation was a lot of fun, so I expect no less from you this time.
So it's 100% on me, and I'll take that.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So you are intimately related with the path of mindful activity, HOMA for short. How did HOMA come about, and how did you get involved with the path of mindful activity?
Well, how it came about was Ponlop Rinpoche wanted to really represent the completeness of the Buddha's intention, you know, in terms of the three wheels of meditation, study, and sometimes translated as work or activity. And so there was no obvious framework for that within, I think, many of the Tibetan traditions have to actually manifest this path explicitly. Whereas in some of the Zen traditions, for instance, it's very much a part of your experience from the beginning. You know, that sense of being completely one with your activity. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a lot of the Tibetan approaches, at least on some level, that's something that's implicit, not so explicit. And Ponlop Rinpoche wanted it to be explicit. He said a funny thing about it. He said, you know, I'd like to develop this and really have a complete curriculum for practice, study, and mindful activity. But I want you to think about it more, not so much from the perspective of Zazen, but more La Zen, as in Lama Zen, so that there's a little bit more emphasis on the relaxation. At the same time, that there's structure and intentionality, mm-hmm. as well as connection to the tradition. So it began with Rinpoche's wish, and then he had given a number of talks and instruction, especially to people who were involved in administrative work within Nalanda Bodhi. And he was drawing on many of those principles to set the foundation for a full or whole path of mindful activity.
When would this have been approximately the beginning of formalizing what we used to just call, I think, like post-meditation?
Right.
So
I would say feels like forever.
Uh-huh.
Is that good enough?
That's that works for me. I'll say to Aina, well, we did that 5 years ago, and she'll say, no, it was 15.
So it was probably about 15. My guess is about 15 years. And when we started talking about formalizing,
okay,
and prior to that was in Rinpoche, in his work with volunteers and especially with administrators. You know, how do you bring your intention together with your administrative work so that it's indeed a reflection of your practice? Mm-hmm. Because volunteers tend to get quite busy, and sometimes it feels like you're opting in for an activity that's very much needed, but you're shirking the bedrock commitments of practice and study. And he wanted to help to soften that comparison, you know, that the actual work that we were doing, if done with the right intention, then is practice itself, mm-hmm. not to the exclusion of, but not to minimize the efforts and the aspirations that were part of that work.
So how did you become what looks like, in terms of the mitras, sort of the point person for POMA? How did that come about?
Well, I think it was a fairly organic choice. Rinpoche asked me to temporarily, as all of these roles are temporary, to lead this process, because I had a lot of past experience with similar work within my prior Buddhist community, really working in the realm of service in a very intimate and complete way. And so that was very much part of my training, and therefore felt quite natural for me to take it up in this context as well.
So your former Buddhist community was Vajradhatu under Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. So what principles did you get while you were doing service in that community that then you sort of brought more into Nalanda Bodhi?
Well, I was a close attendant to the Vajra Regent and actually managed his household for a number of years. And one of the instructions that he gave me that has always been that I always carry in my recollection, and which forms my, I guess, the view of how I regard this work. He said that you should always regard your life as a mandala, regard whatever setting you're in as a mandala. And if you notice in representations of a mandala, nothing is per chance. Nothing is haphazard. Nothing is out of place. And it's not that there's anybody running around, compulsively keeping the mandala in shape, although that does describe me in those years. But it's more the mindset, you know, that you have the view of, you could say, some kind of inherent perfection, not perfectionism, but that there's the possibility for regarding where you are, when you are, as full and complete. And when you bring that kind of attention to a situation, then there's a naturalness to want to arrange things harmoniously, you know, to uplift. I don't know, that sounds kind of abstract, but it's my on the view, the level of the view, that's what I can say about that.
And then how would you, for people who don't have a real sense of that kind of mandala principle, how would that play out in, say, their very concrete, like putting a meal together, let's say?
Yeah. there's always this tension between the right way and get it done. And especially within the Dharma, where we're connecting to this idea of transcendence. You know, this is so important, right? This Dharma path is so important that we have to do it right. We have to do it with precision, and that's going to lead us to the ultimate experience of freedom and liberation. And I remember, I think it was Her Eminence Khandra Rinpoche is talking about the Bodhisattva path, and she said, you know, the Bodhisattva vow is a great idea, but what happens for most of us is then, who wants to be the Bodhisattva? I do. And so we carry that baggage of ego into the, you know, the different vows and commitments that we make. And so that's true in the path of mindful activity context as well. You know, you set out to do something in a way that really demonstrates the beauty, the aesthetic, the intentionality of your path and your practice, and then life happens, right? You kind of run into all the messiness, and path of mindful activity is then it's kind of holding that all as one thing, these things are not in conflict, but they are opportunities. So making a meal, we are going to run into the different styles of chopping and cooking and cleaning. And if you're in a long-term relationship, you know what I'm talking about. We have different styles in the kitchen. If my wife ever hears this, she'll probably chuckle and then hit me over the head.
Our good friend Bruce Tift, in his book, one of the things he wrote was, relationships are inherently disturbing. So that bumper sticker is helpful. Yes, exactly.
So anyway, you know, the short answer to your question, at first having a real feel of intentionality, that there's something not just in the realm of thought, that I'm going to apply my practice in the kitchen, but that we literally pause and have a felt sense of what that intention is in our bodies, in our emotional experience, and in relationship to the kitchen itself. You know, really stop. What's my intention? What's around me? What can I bring to this moment and this environment that illustrates or expresses my practice, and hopefully make something that's tasty at the same time.
So what I'm hearing is sort of the basic principles that one could bring to all of one's situation.
Right. I think that the simplest instruction that serves all settings and activities is remembering to pause and recollecting our intention. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, you find that the rest of all the adornments of your, of what you aspire to are in much closer reach. If you don't do that, it's all just mind. It's all just mental. And that's often in conflict with how we're acting. We're thinking one thing, but we're acting another.
Desynchronized, as they say.
Right.
Mind and mind doing one thing, body doing another. Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Somewhere along the line, that has been told to me countless times. Innumerable. And do I remember it on occasion? So one of the things that I appreciate in this process that you're talking about for mindful activity is that sort of we have this idea of what we're going to do in a situation. And the tendency is that conceptualizing, that thinking then oftentimes just runs the show.
Yeah.
Rather than really synchronizing our body into the space, into the situation.
Right.
So that we're really present and then really looking at what is my intention here. In my the bumper sticker for me from the Buddha is he says, I call karma intention. So what we're looking to do is in that particular moment, what is our intention?
Yeah.
In our activity.
And I think that's a good bridge. I realize that sometimes when I use words and phrases, there's a lot of assumption packed in there about others' understanding. And that intentionality on the path of mindful activity is granular, you could say. There's the view, there's the big view, the aspirational intention of wanting to express bodhicitta, perhaps, you know, in whatever I do. But then what's the particularity, you know, when you're actually in the kitchen chopping the vegetables or cooking at the stove? There, what I find helpful and what we talk about in the path of mindful activity is, you know, bringing a single intention. May I carry out this activity with mindfulness, with a feeling of kindness, and with an aspiration toward devotion. You know, so each time I pick up the knife, each time I pick up the pan, that will be my cue. Right, I kind of set myself with a specific intention, and then where are you going to apply that? I'll apply that in every kind of transitional moment when I pick up the knife, when I pick up the pan. And sometimes it's overly explicit, as learning anything anew can sometimes be. It becomes a bit contrived, but that's just to get the message. Until it's a learned experience, and then it's simply touching in. It's not meant to be a bludgeoning of mindfulness, right? It's meant to be a light touch with delight, with relaxation.
Mm-hmm. It's only been, I'd say recently, let's say, that it has finally hit me that on the cushion, there's sort of very specific instructions about what to do. But in post-meditation, being active, it's taken me a long time to realize just exactly what you're saying. That, each of these moments throughout the day are opportunities to bring back into my mind, what are my intentions? What am I trying to embody in each of these situations?
Yeah.
because it's not really talked about in general.
Well, again, I think in Zen, there's a great emphasis on it, even if it's not talked about. Mm-hmm. There is an expectation and instruction that whatever you're doing, that's your practice. Do it fully, do it wholeheartedly. And we're just developing our language. Mm-hmm. We're not a monastic sangha where you would be in a literal physical container where those kinds of attitudes and practices would be part of what you learn. We have to take it from our meditation out into all of our different worlds. And so our work in Path of Mindful Activity is trying to make those relevant connections between the view that we develop in our studies and then the meditative experience. And then how do we carry that in a light touch way, but effective way into the all of the relationships around us.
So where is the Path of Mindful Activity sort of curriculum around helping people to develop a path of mindful activity?
Well, we have a nice source book. The interesting thing about it, and I hope this is a helpful thing to say, our Nalanda Bodhi community in the formative years has really emphasized the path of study and then began to emphasize more fully the path of meditation. And the path of mindful activity has, not necessarily by design, but in fact, has been something that has been a little bit of a third wheel. Oh. Not in the Buddha's sense of it, but in the in the popular idiom. Mm-hmm. And it's not as sexy, you know. It's not as sexy as the meditative practices or the philosophical treatises. And as we mature as a sangha, we're beginning to integrate it, the path mm-hmm. of activity, but it is taking time. Mm. And so I'm sorry, I take so long in answering questions. Mm. There are two things that are happening now. One of them is that we continue to draw on that source book as the foundation for the curriculum. And we have these, currently they're weekly, 1.5-hour Zoom sessions where we're offering a number of different avenues or gateways into the path of mindful activity in short experiential bites. Those of us who have been involved in creating the curriculum are each taking a role in sharing something both of in the nature of view, but also practice. What are the practices that I actually bring to my life that our path of mindful activity practices and integrate meditation and study with my life. So we're trying to, on the one hand, have that foundation that's really rooted in Rinpoche's teaching and the traditional teachings of activity, virtuous activity. And then on the other side, how is that relevant in my life? In fact, you know, how do I bring that into my life in a way that's not doctrinal or overly contrived, but feels true, genuine, playful. So there's two sides, you know. The root, and then what can grow from that root.
And you've mentioned some of the, you were talking about leading, you know, about making a meal and some of the qualities. So to bring to that situation or all situations, what would you say are the major qualities that the path of mindful activity is looking to share, to have people begin to think about in terms of a way to organize their daily life?
Well, I think that the first thing is not making a project out of it. It's not work. There's actually something more artful about it. And as that message starts to sink in, we're willing to play at it a little bit. And there's a light touch. And then that sense of mindfulness that's not burdensome is available to us. It's not about, you know, focus. It's about relaxed attention, accompanying intentionality. And I think that what often scares people about Path of Mindful Activity is that there's a, it's like, oh gosh, we're going to be, you know, we're going to have to really maintain really tight boundaries around all of our activities. And if it's a full curriculum, I don't know if I've got time to practice the path of mindful activity. It becomes another thing, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than a skillful way of integrating meditating or meditation, study, and the rest of our lives.
When I think of your background, you know, in your position with the Vajra Regent, and then your position as a chaplain, and the way that I experience you and your teaching, etc., is you're very interpersonal in your approach with your teaching in expressing the Dharma. So I can well imagine those experiences, like you've already mentioned, the Vajra Regent, really informing the way that you think about this path of mindful activity.
Oh, yes. If, you know, there's one word that kind of captures the heart of Path of Mindful Activity for me, and that's presence. Mm. And that was something that I was expected to manifest, taught to manifest. And then in my work as a chaplain, I could see the impact of that on people, especially those who were nonverbal, were in intensive care environments with a lot of medical paraphernalia, really restricted, limited. Presence was something that I noticed had a palpable effect, calming effect. And it's not that you can just you can't pretend presence. Mm. You have to let go of something in order to really be there. And that's at the core, that's at the heart of Path of Mindful Activity. You have to be intentional, but you have to let go of yourself in that intentionality. It's not just about becoming a better dishwasher or chop or you know,
interviewer on Zoom.
You're a good one. But that sense of presence, you know, that, yeah. And throughout my subsequent years and the work that I do now, I really note the value of it as an offering to others. What's it like when somebody is fully present to you? It's wonderful, you know? And especially if you have some pain and someone is really listening, really looking, really receiving what you have to say or to feel. It's profound. And the person who is offering that space has to let go of any sense of credential or what am I getting from this? Because that gets in the way. That, you know, that then you're not present. If those are your motivations or they're kind of clouding that brightness.
My experience is there's a blockage going on there.
Yeah.
It blocks. So for me, one of the bumper stickers for me about that sense of presence is open.
Yeah.
Open.
Yeah.
And I think for me, those kinds of things like that then are a really nice connector from my formal meditation practice of presence open to then, all right, let's take this out on the road here.
Yeah. Well, that's a, you know, that's a perfect example of the naturalness of Path of Mindful Activity. It's not about a group of people coming up with the perfect practices that, you know, that then become a curriculum. Whatever we come up with are hopefully they are opening doorways, but they're not creating expectations of, oh, this is the right way. And what you just described is that natural sense of how do I bring my path out here into my relationships, into my world, open.
Open. Yeah. And then for me, it's very, it makes it much easier to see when I'm not.
Well, yeah, don't you love that?
Oh, there we, oh my goodness, how quickly, quickly, and not let go of that and open again.
Right, that's right. You know, John Tarrant, who's a koan Zen teacher, who I really have a lot of appreciation and affection for, as he's guiding meditation, he'll say something to the effect of, well, whatever comes up, don't make it wrong. And then if you make that wrong, well, then don't make that wrong. It's like, he's not going to let you take refuge in all of the clever ways we like to be self-recriminating. You know?
I call that a dogwood sandwich. Remember Dogwood?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Blondie? Yeah. So he had built up these really high sandwiches, and it's like, oh yeah, I get a self-judgment going, and then I'll judge that, and then judge it on top of that, and then it's like, let's eat this whole thing now.
Yes. Well, yeah. Also, you know, it reminds me so much of teachings. I think this is just part of the Dharma journey. we are inspired by what is aspirational, and then we encounter who we are, so to speak, in fact. And there's often, not for all of us, but often there's a gap between where we stand and where we're headed. And we're reminded of that every time we try to apply, we want to have the perfect mindfulness. We want to have the enlightened intention. We want to have bodhicitta as we're screaming, at someone we love very much. but it's that tension between the two, that's the path. Mm-hmm. And what I've discovered in my own life is that the more friendship I can bring to that, to that area of exploration, the more delight there is in the journey. And when I solidify either one of those poles, then it's depressing.
The operative word here when hearing you speak is there's this me or I that's not living up to this aspiration.
Right.
Yeah. Is there any further things that you would like to say about path of mindful activity that we haven't touched on?
Well, I think just to reiterate that it is a natural, organic, and traditional part of the Dharma journey, view, meditation, and conduct and fruition, right? Mm-hmm. It's the conduct. How do we really bring our practice alive in our lives in a way it doesn't just feel like we're contriving all over the place, but we're not leaving it off either. Mm-hmm. I think the tendency, and this was really brought home to me in one of our retreats in Seattle, talking about path of mindful activity, doing some exercises, talking about that important, the point of transition is where we have the most opportunity. It's where we're moving from one thing to the next. And in this case, moving from meditation into activity. If we can build a bridge there, then it ripples out. But so often what happens is we meditate, we leave. And then somewhere down the line, some sense of mindfulness creeps in there and we are on the path. But we were having this session on path of mindful activity, and I asked the participants to stand for a moment before we walk out the door. Now, as you leave, carry this imprint. Just carry this imprint with you through the door. I think it took about 10 seconds for the room to go from silence into an eruption of, what are you going to do? Where are you going from?
Right.
So it's right. It's just our, our tendency is so strong to to move. And so the path of mindful activity is to find ways to make it relevant, not to move so quickly. But relevance is really key. There has to be a good reason, right?
Yeah. For me, I when it sort of dawned on me, like I said, when I say recent times, I'm talking recent times of the last couple of years or so, I think, about how I can remind myself through the day of the qualities that I'm looking to bring to every experience. It's like, oh, right. I've been training myself on the cushion. Douglas, Frank, you could do this during your walking around hours also.
Well, you have many helpers.
Have many helpers.
Off your left shoulder there, you have three. Mr. Ikebana will always bring you back to the moment.
Exactly. I did those for my wife for her birthday. And she put them on the bookshelf. That's what that's about.
Yeah. No, but you shy away from Mr. Ikebana whenever I bring him up. But he really represents the kind of playfulness that's possible between meditation and activity, fully holding the view. So, those kinds of things, Mr. Ikebana is inimitable. I mean, there's only so many of him, but others, for those of us who don't have Mr. Ikebana in our world, in his colorful, dramatic shape behind you there, we can put reminders in our environment, these little objects that we empower with intention. Mm. Please, when I see you next time, may I remember.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm such a fan of Mr. Ikebana that I can't help but kind of nudge, maybe be a little bit of a pain, and I apologize. But
no, Mr. Ikebana gives me great pleasure. and Ina says, Mr. Ikebana is my true character. So
yes.
you always make me sort of smile around. Well, thank you so much for participating in this conversation about the path of mindful activity. And what is your vision for the path of mindful activity for, let's say, 2021?
Well, we've got a good team now.
Who is on your team, let me ask?
Ellen Balze is our national director. Genko Blackman, who's in Seattle, sometimes in Phoenix. Midori Nakamura, looking around the room, Diane Crawford. And when I'm on the spot, I kind of forget important details. So you may have to edit this out.
Okay.
I'm forgetting somebody here. But Rosemary Bacher, Diane Crawford, Mido, Genko, Ellen, me, and then folks who are Path Mindful Activity coordinators in different centers. I would say my hope and my vision for 2021 is that we've stepped off in a very positive way with these weekly bites of experience. And I'd like to continue on a regular basis, maybe not weekly, but frequently enough so that they have a presence in people's minds. Oh, we can go there, and these are interesting. They're fun little vignettes and exercises. And then to further make the source book available in a way that is less curricular, more experimental. That whole idea of curriculum is scary to people, because we have some very weighty curricula in practice and study. And so mindful activity is really more about merging practice, study, and my life, not about taking on a new set of courses. Mm. So making it more visible, more natural, more people involved and feeling like, oh, this is actually enjoyable. Mm. It's not, for years we've tried to get out from under the rock of path of mindful activity equals rota. And so the only time people would hear about path of mindful activity was at a big event where you would be brought to a table, somebody looking at a very big spreadsheet of all the activities that are supporting the event and say, this is your rota assignment. This is your path of mindful activity. Right. And it was an unfortunate juxtaposition, something that I think it was putting the cart before the horse, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can appreciate, you know, sort of getting out from under that kind of marriage, not necessarily what it is.
Yeah.
Road of duty. Duty.
It's duty. Yeah.
Duty. Yeah. Not duty. I like your, talking about path of mindful activity as lighter and more playful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because any kind of tightening up or is just more solidifying, you know, me, I'm doing this, rather than like, I like the idea of playback theater kinds of processes of in every situation. In playback theater is like the basic rule is you have to engage and say yes to it and then build off of that.
Improv. Yeah. Yes, and.
Yeah. And I try to remember that. It's like, that's a good thing to bring into my
day. I think that's profound, you know, that yes, and.
Yes, and. You have to engage with it, acknowledge it.
Yes.
And then playfully, like, create what is the next open. Where is this going from here?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful exercise. Mm. It's a wonderful attitude. But as an exercise, it's got all the elements of being present, being playful, being creative,
engaged. Acknowledging. Yeah, exactly. Well, with that, is there a poem you might like to read at the end of this?
Yes.
Oh, great. And—
aha.
Yeah. Excellent.
See if I well, I think this one is fitting because it speaks to all of the qualities that we have discussed.
Ah, nice.
It's a poem by Mark Doty, and it's entitled Golden Retrievals. Mm. You've heard it. Mm. Fetch, balls and sticks capture my attention seconds at a time. Catch, I don't think so. Bunny, tumbling leaf, a squirrel who's, oh joy, actually scared. Sniff the wind, then I'm off again. Muck, pond, ditch, residue of any thrillingly dead thing. And you? Either you're sunk in the past half-hour walk, thinking of what you never can bring back. Or else you're off in some fog concerning tomorrow? Is that what you call it? My work, to unsnare time's warp, and woof, retrieving my haze-headed friend, you. This shining bark, a Zen master's bronzy gong, calls you here entirely, now. Bow wow. Bow wow. Bow wow. Golden retrievals, Mark Doty.
With that, let's bow wow out.
Bow wow.
Bow wow. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Douglas.
All right. Stop recording.